Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this week's segment of Live Without Limits. What I would like to do, since we're talking about reflecting on the past and how it's influencing or planning for the future, what I want to do is also read you an article or something that came in to me this morning that I think really reflects on how we can plan for the future and how we can understand how it's all cause and effect and how it all works together. And so let me go on and get started. And what we can do then is talk to you, give you some more information on how this all works together. And here's the story. Whoa. On October 3rd, 1945, a 10-year-old boy stood on stage at the Mississippi-Alabama Fair and Dairy Show Talent Contest. He was dressed as a cowboy. One of his teachers had encouraged him to enter the contest after hearing him sing during morning prayers. He had to stand on a chair to reach the microphone. He pledged fifth. A few months later, he received a guitar for his 11th birthday. What he really wanted was a rifle or a bicycle. Two of his uncles and the new pastor at the family church gave him basic guitar lessons. He learned mostly by watching other people, but he didn't like singing in public. He was too shy, yet something inside kept pulling him back to music. In 1948, his family moved from Tupelo, Mississippi, to Memphis, Tennessee. The boy would spend every moment of his free time on Beale Street, the heart of Memphis blues scene. He'd often bring his guitar to school, yet his eighth grade teacher gave him a C in music. She told him that he had no gift for singing. During his teenage years, he was often bullied by classmates, called a mama's boy, still painfully shy. He nevertheless stood out because of his appearance, including long sunburns, slicked back hair, and funky clothes. In 1953, the young man walked into the offices of Sun Records. In those days, you could pay for studio time and create your own record. The receptionist asked him who he sounded like. The young man replied, "I don't sound like nobody." But the record went nowhere. He tried out for a local singing group but failed the audition. He told his father, "They told me I couldn't sing." Unbeknownst to the young man, Sam Phillips, the owner of Sun Records, had been saying to his friends, "If I could find a white man who had the Negro sound and the Negro feel, I could make $1 billion. Then Sam heard this young man's record. Sam invited him back to the studio and asked him to sing as many songs as he knew. Yet even then, the recording session was not going well. Things just weren't coming together. The young man and his backup musician were about to pack it up and go home when the young man suddenly picked up his guitar and started singing a 1946 blues song, "That's All Right." In the words of one of the musicians from that legendary session, all of a sudden, he just started singing this song, jumping around, and acting the fool. And then Bill picked up his bass, and he started acting the fool, too. And I started playing with them. Sam, I think, had the door to the control booth open. He stuck his head out and said, "What are you doing?" And we said, "We don't know." "Well, back up," he said. "Try to find a place to start and do it again." Phillips immediately began taping. He knew this was the sound he'd been looking for. Sun Records released the album. No one had ever heard anything like it before. And within 3 years, Elvis Presley was an international superstar. A few years ago, I got a chance to visit Graceland, Elvis's Memphis mansion, and now National Historic Landmark. I was speaking at a corporate conference, and the company arranged for a private tour of Graceland for me and the company executives. It was an amazing experience, one I'll never forget. Elvis died on August 16, 1977, so his home is decorated in that distinctive 70s style and will remain that way forever. One thing that surprised me is that Elvis's mansion is much smaller than you might think. For example, the kitchen is positively cramped. The pool in the backyard, the one you see in all those home movies, is only average size. But in one room of Graceland is an enormous display of his different costumes, shimmering sequins and bursting with color. And then the small garden in the back where he, his mother, and stillborn brother are buried. It's impossible to be there and not stand in awe and humility. Whether or not you're a fan of the man or his music, there's no question that Elvis Presley is the world's first modern superstar. He transcended race, age, and has even transcended death. He continues to make more money every year after his death than he ever made while he was alive. We have each been given special gifts unique to us. Your gift may not be appreciated or even recognized by your teachers, your peers, or even your family, yet it's there. Nurture it. Thank God for it. Share it with the right people. Soon it will be seen. Happy 76th birthday, Elvis. May today be a joyous day for you. And the reason that I read this scene is because, remember, what happened here was someone who often or was told he wouldn't succeed or was told he didn't have, but yet because it was a love of his and something that he enjoyed doing, he pursued it. And in pursuing it, he became a superstar. You can become a superstar in anything you choose to do as well. So why not think about all of the things that you've done in the past year and how it influences where you are today and how you can take all of that and put it all together and make it all work for you. And think of what you can do that can really benefit you in all of the things that you can do today. And think about how you can grow, put yourself where you expect to be in the near future, or your goals, or how you plan to make everything work for you, and plan for your future. Often, what happens is we get through a year, and we think, oh, we don't look back, and we don't look and see the things that we've accomplished for that year, because often you have accomplished a lot more than you realized you've accomplished. And in doing so, that puts you in a place that you can especially be and get yourself what it is that you really want. And often what I like to do around the first of the year is reflect on what I've accomplished in the past year and what I plan to accomplish in the new year. And for one thing, I can also say that often when I do this, I find that I've accomplished a lot, and what I did last year often has put me in a position to move forward in this coming year. For instance, you know, building self-esteem and how it plans for and helps you grow and plan for what it is that you expect to accomplish in the future and how you expect to make things work for you. Often it's a matter of what it is that you really want in life and how you're going to plan for it, how you're going to do what you need to do. Recently, we've been hearing reports, and let's talk about this, that there was a story on the news about someone called Ted Williams. And when you think of Ted Williams, often you think of the baseball player who was a pitcher. But this Ted Williams was someone who had a voice that was golden, is the term that they've been using, but it was a very distinctive voice and a very good radio voice. he had done a lot of voiceovers and been on radio and even made a good income for himself. But along the way, he got hooked into drugs and alcohol and let that rule his life so that he lost everything he had and he was on the street. Finally, after a while, he began to realize that what it would take for him to get out of where he was, and he had to decide for himself what it is that he wanted. And he also began to go back to practicing his faith in God. And in doing so, he started asking for what he specifically wanted, which was an opportunity to get back into his career. He met someone who took a video of him, put it on YouTube, and all of a sudden it went viral. All the news outlets got a hold of it, and guess what? He's now got offers to work again and do what he really loves to do. So there's always opportunity for you if you choose to accept it and to look for the things that you really can see that can really benefit you and help you get from where you are today and what it is that you really want. And let me back up and also tell you this, that I grew up with a disability, and I was educated before there were laws on the books guaranteeing people with disabilities the right to an education. Therefore, what was happening to me was because the teachers didn't understand that I learned differently, and the school system has a way of setting up one way and teachers doing one way of teaching and expecting you to be able to get all of these things and learn all of these things exactly the way it was meant to be. It was, then what happens is if you don't learn in that specific way, then guess what happens? You're lost. So people don't realize just how important it is, you know. And the thing is, if you accept what people tell you that you're a waste, whatever, and you accept that, then you will never ever succeed. But if you believe in yourself, if you learn, if you accept that you have capabilities and that you're unique, then guess what? You will always fail, because what it is it's so ingrained in us to fail. And for me, even though I knew that my grades were never showing my potential, I wanted more than what society was telling me I was capable of, and I knew if I kept working towards my goals, I would reach my goals, and also worked on them so that I could see what it is that I really wanted in life. And looking at my personality, I remember being in school and having had to have surgery due to my disability so that I can get better range of motion in my hand, so I could have better mobility instead of dragging my foot as badly as I did and having to always wear a brace. And so I looked at nursing as something that I would be interested in, but I was not very good in the sciences, just because when I learned, it's not easy that when I read something, I also have to hear it. If something was made into a TV show and it was something I watched, I would remember it more than if it was just I go home, I read it, I verbalize it, because there's such a way of learning that it's going to go from the short-term memory into the long-term memory. That for me, if I actually take what I do and actually use it and practice it, that's how I learn it. But for someone else, you got people that are auditory learners. You have people who actually can learn by reading. You even have people who have photographic memories that can just read something once and remember it and go do very well on a test. But because I learned differently, my grades did not actually show what my full potential was. And teachers would often say, oh, she daydreams a lot. Oh, but the real issue was that I had a short attention span. And that what you really just needed to do was bring me back to where, you know, what was going on in the classroom. And part of it was that I would get bored
in the classroom, because I guess part of it is, you know, when you think about it, all of us learn at a different pace, with a different, have a different way of learning, that if they're not doing the method that really helps me learn and really helps me with my concentration, then you're going to lose me, because I'm not going to be concentrating on what you're saying. And it's just a matter of what works for me as opposed to what works for someone else. So think of all of the things that you can do that can really benefit you. And let's, you know, what we need to do is think about, okay, what did you do last year? What was that doing that was going to get you planned on what it is that you really want in life and what it is that you really expect to have in your personal life, and go from there. And think of all of the things that you can do that can really benefit you and put you where you really want to be. And often we don't always think about those things because, you know, we can always put a date on things. If you have control over everything that you do, then it can happen exactly the way you want it to. But if you're dealing and waiting on other people, then they have a different attention. They have a different time that they're working on. So usually what happens is things don't always happen exactly the way you want them to happen. But if you're persistent, then guess what? They will happen. And think about it. When we talk about the job market, we're talking about high unemployment. And the best thing to do is to look back at that and say, how has it changed over the last century? How is it going to benefit me to understand these changes? And how is that going to work for me so that I can use it to put myself where I really want to be? And think about all of those things. Think about how you can use your knowledge and your experience to get where you want to be. And there's a story that I've often told many times that shows how employment has changed over the last century and how we've moved back to really where we were 100 years ago in the workplace. It's just a matter of thinking about how you can benefit and use the things that have really put you where it is that you really expect to be and want to be, all in the same place, and how you're going to look at things in a way that's going to get you what it is that you really and truly want for yourself. And let's think about some of the things that we can do. For instance, when we talk about employment and we think about where we were 100 years ago and how it has affected where we are today, then what we need to think about is that during the early part of the 20th century, there was a large influx of Europeans into the United States. Many of them brought their work ethic with them. In the home villages, they often took their wares on push carts and walked the streets selling them. In America, they would take their wares and put it on push carts and sell it on the street corner. And I remember my father talking about how his father used to have a fruit stand in Savannah, Georgia. And for those who went to work for companies, they were loyal employees because they wanted to work. And so the employees would often work for free until the owner was able to pay them a salary. For their loyalty, they were rewarded by having a job for life. And so they were usually willing to work for that company until they decided to retire. Often these small businesses grew to become large companies and in some cases corporations. And I remember my mother talking about Uncle Barney. Uncle Barney went to work for the steel mill. And because he was willing to work for free until the owner was willing was able to pay him a salary, then in the owner's will, when he died, he put it in his will that his sons could not fire Uncle Bonnie. They had to let him work until he was ready to retire. So he worked until he was in his 70s, and he lived to be 99. And I don't know if he may have lived even longer than that, but he was in a supportive living environment. He got up during the night thinking it was morning, got dressed, went downstairs to eat breakfast, and as he was going down the stairs, he slipped and fell. And when he did so, he hit his head and his head, and that's how he died. And so there's no reason to think he may have lived to be 100 or older, because the Eastern Europeans were gesunder. They were healthy. So when you think about it, it's how have things changed and how have they gotten better, and how can you adapt to what's going on now in the workplace? And for those who went to work for companies, they were loyal. Okay. The first generation born in this country fought during World War II when their country asked them to fight for freedom. After the war, the generation went to work for the corporations. They started at the bottom and worked their way up into management. After 25 years, they were given a retirement party and a gold watch for their loyalty. Their children were known as the baby boomer generation. And that generation that went to work for the corporation, I don't have a personal example of that because my father was a professional. He was a real estate lawyer. But I have a friend whose father worked for a trucking company and worked his way up into management and retired after 25 years. Okay. Now, when they were in school getting an education, schools and parents encouraged the students to go to work for the corporation, which many did. But and this is the baby boomer generation now. And let's get back there and let's say that when the baby boomer generation were getting their education in the schools and parents encouraged the students to go to work for the corporation, which many did, but after 15 to 20 years during the 1990s, many corporations had merged and had multiple people performing similar jobs, so they needed to cut the workforce. Some offered buyout packages because until then, when you went to work for the corporation, it was an unwritten rule that when an individual had a contract for life. Today, if you go to work for the corporation, your job expectancy may be 5 years or less. Okay? And an example of that is I have a friend who was working for IBM. And after 22 and a half years, she was offered a buyout package. And she took the buyout package, which meant that she had an income for 6 months. And she also had her health care coverage long term. But what happened was during that six-month period, she took the opportunity to decide whether self-employment was for her. She found out it wasn't. Through her church, she had found out that mailboxes, et cetera, was looking to hire someone to work in the store. She became a supervisor and worked in the store during the week. And since they were a small store business at that time, she was usually the only employee there. But after a couple of 4 years working with mailboxes, et cetera, she went to work for Nordstrom's and worked there another 4 or 5 years before she retired. So any generation after that has no guaranteed jobs anymore. Working for a corporation is a great way to learn a job ethic and then take the skills and apply it to building your own business. Not only has the job market changed with the new century, but the work ethic has changed as well. Employees are no longer loyal to the company. Therefore, the company is no longer loyal to the employee. Generation X, Generation Nexter, and the Millennial Generation need to consider alternative methods of finding gainful employment, looking for the typical job working for the same corporation all your life no longer exists. during the current economic downturn, I have noted that many more cultural changes take place. Many companies, in order to cut expenses, are renting a smaller office space and hiring people to work from home. This allows the individual more flexi time and reduces operating costs for the company. Another major cultural change that has taken place in the last century is in regards to the way that much business is done today. When the Europeans first came to the United States, they took their wares and sold them on street corners. But today, business owners have websites or e-commerce storefronts that they load pictures of their wares on and sell internationally as well as locally. These cultural changes have brought about changes to job titles. A secretary who worked in an office as an executive assistant today works from home as a virtual assistant. A graphic designer today is also a web designer and a sales executive, a freelance consultant. When I am working with clients, I often encourage them to think about the passions and personal interests and how they can build them into a high-paying income for themselves. When I have asked clients this question, if you could do anything you love to do and earn an income doing it, what would it be? Many have an immediate answer, but they just don't know how to put together a strategic plan and build it into a business. The future promises further cultural change with the strong possibility of more people consciously choosing to work from home and instead of working for just one company in an office, why not choose to work for multiple companies? Just because a company may not be willing to pay you the salary you want, they may be willing to pay you more money for less hours under the type of arrangement, and working for multiple companies can subsequently provide you with better quality of life and a higher income. I believe that as children, we are good at coming up with many ideas, but education often teaches us to conform and listen to authority, so we lose our creativity as adults. Therefore, we lose the ability to think outside the box when it comes to being creative about employment. To summarize, these are my lessons learned during the recession. Be more creative when it comes to employment and learn to think outside the box. Do not be frightened to incorporate technology into your business. Think about having multiple streams of income. Think about alternative methods of financing your business. Use the need to change as an opportunity to think what you have a passion for and how you can build it into a high-paying income. Build a mentor group around you so that you can bounce ideas off them and when growing your business. Since so many people are solopreneurs today, why not use each other as a resource to outsource your business needs so that you are not wearing all the hats at the same time? To tie all of this together, one needs to learn to become adapted to their environment because it is always changing. Just like the workplace is constantly changing, jobs that existed 10 years ago don't exist today. Jobs that exist today didn't exist 10 years ago, and there will be jobs in the future that haven't been invented yet. I came across an article that talked about how the job market has changed and how many jobs have gone overseas. And these jobs have been lost to America forever. Part of the reason is because the unions outprice the job market. But it's also because third world countries are becoming more educated and technology savvy, so they are able to fill positions that homegrown employees are unable to do. And one of the reasons that I read this is because when you think about where we are today and what we want in the future, then you need to think about how you can plan for and do what it will take to put yourself in a position so that you can be financially solvent and have a career where you are doing the things that you need to do to get yourself to the next level. That's all part of planning for the future. And you can also go to my website, and that website is onepersonalcareercoach.com, and you can sign up for individual coaching or group coaching. What I'm doing initially is offering a 30-minute complimentary coaching consultation that will help you think about and plan for the future. And I want to take a short break here, and I will be back with you in about a minute. And now we're back for the last 30 minutes, and what we're going to do is concentrate more on how we can help each other to build and plan for the future, simply because when you look at what it is that you need to do, you need to think about how you're going to build self-esteem. You want to succeed, and you've got obstacles in your way or things that you're thinking about that are putting you in a position of thinking of how you can, that is that consciously we tell ourselves that we can succeed, but subconsciously our thoughts that control us are the things that we hear in our head. And if you've got negative thoughts in your head that people have told you around you, just like when I read you the story about Elvis Presley and what he went through as a child, and the fact that he was often told you can't sing and you can't do this, but yet this was something that he really loved, that eventually he became very successful at what he did. And today his estate is worth millions of dollars. If it had been up to him or his own family, his estate would have been long gone. But because Priscilla was as smart as she was, and she understood that she needed to leave this as a legacy for her daughter, what did she do? She looked at the fact that everyone else was making money off of Elvis's name. So what did she do? She licensed his name so that if anyone wanted to use his name on anything or any of his music, they had to pay the estate money. And because she realized that when you were paying taxes on property and there was no money coming in, that you had to look at a way that you can generate money so that it can pay for itself. So what did she do? Because everyone loved Elvis so much and they were devastated at his death, she turned his home into a museum so it became a moneymaker. And it also allowed her to leave it as a legacy to her daughter and to his grandchildren, and it will be there for centuries. And these are things that we don't always think about, is what is the legacy that we're leaving? For instance, if you're a negative person and you are abusive, then that's the legacy that you're going to leave, that people are going to remember about you. And if it's not the legacy you want to leave, then you need to think about what it is that you're doing and how you can change, because we don't always think about how we are sabotaging our own legacy and we're not even doing what we need to do that's going to put us in a position to be and have what it is that we really want out of life. So think about those things. Think about how you turn around and sabotage your own success. If you haven't done this in the last year, then sit down and write out a plan that you want to put in action. If you're unemployed and you want to start a business, sit down and think about what are the skills that you have? What is it that you really love to do? And think about putting together a strategic plan on how you're going to make that work for yourself. And if you don't know how to do that, then why not contact someone who can help you put together that strategic plan and know what it is that you need to do that's going to work for you. Often we don't always think about those things. We know what it is that we really love to do. We know what it is that we really desire in life. But at the same time, we don't always know how to go about and make it work. And sometimes if you're spiritual, and this is something that I believe in, that in a way God puts opportunities in front of us, are we going to recognize it? Are we going to do what we need to do to make the contact so that we can expand our business? Because remember, Hillary Clinton wrote a book that said no one person can be, it takes a village to make things happen. So if it takes a village, then guess what? You got to look for people that can help you to put things in place for yourself, that can give you the support system that you need to get from where you are now to where you want to be in the future. And think about all of those things and think about how you can really put yourself in that zone that you really want to be in and how you can take that and make it all work for you. Recently, there's been articles about how unemployment has gone down and how, but out of the unemployment, only 103,000 jobs have actually been added to the job market, and yet it went from 9.8% to 9.4%. So what are they saying? They're saying that a lot of people are just no longer looking for jobs, so that it looks like or seems like that people have, that more people are working than really is. And it's because they've learned to adapt and they've learned to think of alternative methods, ways of generating an income for themselves. And there's always things that we can do if we just think about it, if we just plan for it. And often, I know people will say, oh, if you believe in God and you sit there and you just pray to God, it will, you know, you'll get what you want. Well, you will to an extent, but if you don't go out there and do what it takes to get what you want, then you can be waiting for it for the rest of your life. Just think of this guy, Ted Williams. When he was out there panhandling because he needed money to even just buy something to eat, then and if the right person hadn't heard him, he would still be on the street today. Instead of in a matter of days of his video going viral, he's now got so many job offers coming in. So think about how you can even use technology to advance what it is that you want. Think about what happened with Justin Bieber, some of these people that are in entertainment. They would sit in front of their computer. They would use their webcam, and they would make videos, and then they would put it on YouTube. Someone heard it, and guess what? When that person heard it, it got to the right person, and they liked what they heard. Justin Bieber, what happened to him? Usher saw his video and heard him singing, and he contacted him, and it didn't happen overnight, but what is he today? What is he's gotten a recording contract, he's gone out, and he's been doing concerts, and he's going to have a long-term career. And remember, just because you start out with one avenue doing one thing doesn't mean that you can't adapt what it is that you really want to do. For instance, when I entered the workplace 30-some-odd years ago, I could not find gainful employment because they were not hiring people with disabilities. If I had let society tell me that I'm helpless and I'm worthless and I don't really exist and I shouldn't be wanting to compete in the job market the way I want to, then guess what? I would still be living with my mother, getting a government check, she controlling my money, she deciding what I eat, how I do anything, where I go, what I wear. And this way, because I was persistent in my goals and what it is that I wanted, guess what? Not only have I been in business for myself 30 years, but I'm now going to be getting a book published that I wrote 3 years ago. That for, once I finished the book, it was a matter of, okay, I know I need to self-publish, contacting all these publishing companies, telling me it would take over $1,000 to get this book published and promoted, and knowing I did not have that kind of money, I waited, you know, I was just holding on to it, waiting to get the money to be able to move that book to the next level, because that book is going to encompass what it took for me to overcome the emotional abuse, the verbal abuse, and society's attitudes to achieve things in my life. And let me go back and say, when I entered the workforce 30 years ago, because my background was in mental health and psychology, and I had trained in psychodrama and transactional analysis, what I wanted to do was offer group therapy sessions using these forms of therapy. And needless to say, without having the master's degree, I was unable to contract with the mental health centers or the private mental health hospitals to be able to go in there and run groups. Well, then I realized as a child, when I was in the classroom, even though I was struggling, one of the areas that I really loved was when I would stand up in front of the group and report on a book that I read. And I always was able to find what to talk about. And then what I did was I went to Toastmasters, I got the CTM, I got the ATM, I learned to speak, and that when my thought processes were not giving me the words to say, to just shut up and hold my mouth quiet until the words came to me, so that it sounded smoother when I talked. Yes, there were dead spots. Even in what I'm doing here, you hear those dead spots, because it's better to do that than to make noises that someone, when they hear it can be very distracting, and it doesn't sound like the person's thoughts are really flowing. So stop and think about it. Then what I did was I also went to National Speakers Association, the Georgia chapter, and I took part in the mentoring program, and I put together a speech, "Success is My Only Option." And in that speech, I talked about the importance of communication, the importance of listening, and the importance of employment and how to go out and get gainful employment. And I also learned to put stories in there that emphasize the things that I needed to do. When I put together my book, I knew that I needed someone that can proofread it, that would know where to put the things that needed to be put to emphasize my point, to sound like good reading, and really get the individual hooked into my story. So as you see, those are things that don't always come immediately to you, and it may not come to you at the stages that you expect them to happen, but if you are persistent and you believe in it, then guess what? It will happen. And I know that once my book is published, once my story gets out there, then my business will grow. So I know all the steps that I need to do, and I've had the support systems, and I've looked for other opportunities to get people that can help me get my business where I want it to be. And I know that I've helped people along the way without asking for money, because I knew they couldn't pay it at the time. But I know that long term, when they become successful, they are a success story that I can tell that I helped someone achieve. They become my testimonial that can help me get more business with other people. So when you think about all of those things, when you think about planning and what you need to do to plan your life, then these are things that you can do that can really help you think about what it is that you need to do that can help you get from where you are now to where you want to be. But it's all planning. It's all having a plan on what your goals are for the year. That's why it's important. Every business at the end of the year ties up and looks at what they've accomplished for that year. What is the what's the income? What was the gain and what was the loss for the year? Corporations do this on a quarterly basis. And then because they're corporations, their quarterly income gets reported, and it can be reported as a gain or a loss on what they've done for that quarter. But at the end of the year, when you look at the overall picture, then that gives you an idea of what it is that you've achieved, how much more it will take for you to get to the next level. And remember, you have a plan of what it is that you want to do, of what you want your goals to be, but often things, you got to remember, you often have to adapt things, because you want it to be this way at this time does not always mean it's going to happen exactly as you expect to do. So be willing to adapt and be willing to make personal changes in your life that can really put you where you want to be and where you expect to be. But if you have a plan, a general idea of what your goals are and where you want them to be in the future, then guess what? They will work for you. But you have to plan everything. You just don't wing it. Winging it is never going to get you anywhere in anything you do. Just think about it. When you're in school, what happens? Each grade says, and each course says, you have certain things that you have to read and that a certain grade point average that you have to achieve before you can expect to get any gains for it. If you look at athletes, when they first start out in their profession, they start out at the lower end, and then once they prove themselves and they prove their abilities, then their income goes up. And it's all proportionate to what they have achieved for the past year. If their production goes down, then their salary also for the next year goes down. But once they've achieved it where they have proven themselves, then they can get to a point where they demand what they want, and they can go to the team they want to be on, and they can choose what it is that they want. So think about all of those things. Think about how you can incorporate all of those things into your lifestyle and put it together so you can have plans for the future and what it is that you're going to do, whether it's in your business and in your personal life. And remember, relationships work at the time that they work because two people are at the right place at the right time looking for the same thing. If they're not, then guess what? That relationship may get started, but it's going to fizzle out along the way because they're going to get to a point where one's looking for one thing and the other person is looking for something else, and it's not going to jive. You see that even in marriages between entertainers, because they happen to hook up at a time and meet each other when either they're making a movie or they're doing something where they're working together. And then guess what? That they get married, they have a relationship, they start having children, but along the way something changes. when you see a couple that have been married a long time and their children have grown, and both of them invested their time in their children instead of the relationship between them, then when the children are grown and gone, there's no communication or relationship left there, and unless they want to reinvest in the marriage and try and find what it was they had that brought them together, then that usually means that they're put at a point where that marriage is terminated. And then, especially in men, when they're used to having someone else being the decision maker for them, and then they're looking almost immediately to get married, and they're not realizing that they got to take time to look at themselves, see what it was that they did wrong, how they need to change. Often they will tell you when a marriage breaks up, you need to not plan on getting married for at least 4 years, because it takes that long for you to work through all of the personal issues and problems that you've had in the last relationship. And once you do that, then guess what? You can come at it from a new and fresh point of view of what it is that you really want and how to be not just be lovers, but be companions and be friends, because a relationship is based on a friendship. It's what makes it work. It's how you see things. It's having someone who is going to say, I want to respect you. I want to help meet your emotional needs. I want to be there for you to bounce ideas off of. I want them to be there so that you and I can have a relationship that's based on that we're both in the same place and we both want the same things in life, because that's what really makes a relationship last long term, even after the children are grown. Think about it. What is it that you really want? And if you're looking for a relationship this year, then think about what it is that you need to do and the work that you need to do on yourself to put yourself in position to have a relationship. Are you willing to give up something of yourself to have someone else in your life long term? Are you willing to be a companion and a lover to that person? Are you willing to be a support person to that individual? Because, you know, we all have ups and downs. We all have times when we're hurting and we need someone else to lean on. And often when we have that, then we can get to a point where we respect each other and we give to each other unconditionally. But if that person is not meeting a need that we have, then what is happening is we're feeling anger towards that person. I see it even in my relationship with my sister, in the way she's treated me. I'm angry over the way she's treated me. So when I'm on the phone with her, we can't even hold a conversation. And it's not just that, it's that I see it and she doesn't, and she doesn't want to sit down with me and say, what can we do that can help if both of us get over the anger that we're feeling? It's like she wants to make it out like it's all me, and she's not recognizing what she did to create it. So it makes my anger worse. And I understand why I react that way. And I know that if she was willing to meet me halfway and sit down and talk to me, we can work through it. But I don't like to be dictated to. I don't like to be controlled. And the sad part is that's what she thinks she can do. And a lot of times I don't even think she's recognizing where it's all coming from, because I know that there's jealousy there. And I remember the stories my mother did and the things my mother did to create the jealousy and the hostility. And that's because when she grew up as a child, she came from a home where her parents fought all the time. And her mother created jealousy between them. She would talk about what this one had and what that one had. My mother's now 92 years old. I think she's got years on her yet, not months and not days, but years. And in the process, she's miserable. And because my younger sister is very much like her. Whereas my mother was always talked about what other people had and what money they had in the bank and the clothes they were wearing. Those things are minor. Those are the things that don't define someone, but for them, that's what defined them. Because my mother had nothing else on her mind, she's now 92 years old. She's pretty much lost her hearing. She's also at a point where she's losing her eyesight. So what is she doing? She's just existing till the day she dies. I don't know if she may even be praying for the day she dies because she's unhappy. And my sister, I keep telling her, you look at her because that's going to be you someday, and you're not going to have anyone that comes to you and is going to take care of you. Years ago, when I was living in a government complex, and I had a neighbor that lived over me, and I knew from talking to her that her husband was gone, that her children had died, that her daughter died at 3 days old from meningitis, and that her son died at 20 years old in a car accident with a drunk driver. And yet my mother, when she talked to her, didn't even bother to ask her to find out whether or not she had had children, and just assumed she never did. And my mother made the remark to her, "I wish I would never have had any children." Well, that's a stupid remark for someone who had been very close to her son and would have been very close to her daughter had she had her daughter live. So how can it's thinking about all of the things that you do and where you're coming from when you're doing it that puts you in a place down the road in the future where you're going to find that things roll around. They fall back. And when you think about what comes to us is something that we put out there. And the fact of the matter is my mother's in the shape she's in because of the way she was in the past. She just happens to be lucky that she has children, because if she didn't have children, she would have been in a nursing home and sitting there and having to depend on people to get her up and get dressed when they want to do it. And that means she's going to have to get up in the morning at 7 o'clock when they come on, when they dress her, when they feed her, and then she's going to sit there and do nothing all day till it's lunchtime, and they take her and put the food in front of her where she can eat it. And then in this way, because she has children, she has someone there that can do the cooking for her, that can take her out when she wants to go out someplace just to get her out of the house for the day. She has, you know, and yet this is someone who sat there and said to someone, "I wish I'd never had any children." Instead of being willing and acknowledging the fact and finding out where this woman was and why she was. So remember, cause and effect. The things that we do today influence where we are in the future. What you did last year is going to influence where you are today in the business world. And if you need help figuring out what it is that you really want in life, then you can contact me by going to my website. And that website is onepersonalcareercoach.com.